Today, we're delving into a fascinating and critically important area, the potential for psychedelic-assisted therapy in neurodivergent adults, specifically using the compound 2CB. Our discussion centers on a position paper and research rationale version 4.0 from April 2026, authored by Sam Karam, the founder and board chair of the Cedar Institute. Eloise, this paper makes a powerful argument that neurodivergent adults have been largely overlooked in psychedelic research, despite clear indications they could benefit.
That's exactly right, Alex. The paper highlights a significant gap. Neurodivergent adults, who make up an estimated 15 to 20% of the global population, have been virtually excluded from psychedelic therapy research. To put that in perspective, we're talking about a demographic that experiences probable PTSD at rates 7 to 10 times higher than the general population. Yet, only one small pilot study involving MDMA for social anxiety in 12 autistic adults has ever tested a psychedelic intervention for them.
That's a staggering disparity. Why has this population been so consistently excluded from these studies, particularly given their elevated rates of conditions like PTSD, depression, and anxiety?
The paper argues this exclusion is structural. Mainstream therapy models fundamentally assume neurotypical processing. They expect a linear narrative, predictable emotional responses, standard interoceptive feedback, and conventional relational dynamics. As psychiatrist Xiang Yuan Lin observed, quote, "We cannot just say the treatment response in a neurotypical brain will be the same as in an autistic brain," end quote. So the foundational approach to therapy itself hasn't been designed with neurodivergent individuals in mind, leading to this systemic oversight.
It's not just the exclusion, though. The paper also points to specific challenges like the trauma burden and alexithymia. Can you elaborate on how these conditions uniquely impact neurodivergent adults and make conventional therapies less effective?
Certainly. The trauma burden is immense. Research shows around 60% of autistic adults report probable lifetime PTSD compared to 4.5% in the general population. This isn't just about higher exposure to victimization, but also different processing. Autistic individuals can perceive events as traumatic that fall below the diagnostic criteria for DSM-5 criterion A, things like sensory overwhelm or disruptions to routine. They reduce cognitive flexibility and elevated rumination mean trauma patterns persist, even with sustained therapeutic effort. The paper also makes the critical distinction that not all autistic distress is trauma-driven. Things like burnout or sensory overload are direct consequences of environment neurology mismatch, not trauma.
And then there's alexithymia, which many listeners might not be familiar with. How does that create a bottleneck for therapy?
Alexithymia is the difficulty identifying and describing one's own emotional states, often coupled with impaired interoception, which is the sense of the internal state of the body. It co-occurs with autism in nearly 50% of cases, versus only about 5% in neurotypical controls. Most therapies rely heavily on emotional processing, on being able to articulate what you feel. If you struggle with that fundamental capacity, these therapies are significantly hampered. The research program specifically targets trauma-driven distress.
It sounds like conventional approaches are missing a crucial piece of the puzzle. This leads us to a really interesting historical hypothesis the paper advances, that undiagnosed neurodivergence might actually explain some of the striking efficacy seen in early psychedelic research. Can you unpack this historical reframing?
It's a provocative idea. The paper suggests that throughout the mid-20th century, psychiatric institutions housed many treatment-resistant patients. But autism and ADHD weren't standalone diagnoses until the DSM-3 in 1980. So individuals with neurodevelopmental conditions were often misdiagnosed with things like schizophrenia or personality disorders, or simply institutionalized without specific diagnoses. Their social withdrawal, emotional dysregulation, and sensory reactivity were misinterpreted as primary psychiatric illness symptoms.
So people who were struggling because of their neurodivergence were instead being treated for something else entirely, often in ways that couldn't possibly address their actual needs.
Precisely. Their resistance to conventional talk therapy was misattributed. Talk therapy demands verbal emotional processing, which alexithymia impairs. Behavioral interventions require cognitive flexibility, which autistic processing can constrain. The argument is that early psychedelics like LSD and mescaline and later MDMA were reaching these undiagnosed neurodivergent individuals whom conventional modalities couldn't help. The compounds may have temporarily bypassed the processing rigidity that held the trauma in place. In fact, clinicians documenting underground use in Zurich spanning decades reported these compounds were most effective precisely in patients who had not responded to conventional treatment.
That's a powerful reframing. It suggests that resistance to treatment wasn't a flaw in the patient, but a mismatch in the therapeutic approach. And while you can't retroactively diagnose people from that era, the paper frames this as a hypothesis that generates testable predictions for today.
Exactly. If undiagnosed neurodivergence contributed to that historical efficacy, then contemporary studies explicitly recruiting neurodivergent participants should see comparable or even superior therapeutic responses. This forms a core motivation for the proposed research program.
This leads us to why the paper specifically advocates for 2CB. Given the array of psychedelics currently being researched, what makes 2CB particularly suited for neurodivergent populations over, say, MDMA or psilocybin?
2CB has a distinctive pharmacological profile that seems well-matched to the clinical needs of neurodivergent individuals. Compared to MDMA, which has shown efficacy for social anxiety, but carries neurotoxicity concerns with repeated dosing and significant cardiovascular stimulation, 2CB interacts with the serotonin transporter at a lower potency. This might offer the intactogenic warmth without the same risk of monoaminogenic depletion. It also has a shorter duration of 4 to 6 hours compared to LSD's 8 to 12 hours, which is a major practical tolerability concern for a sensory sensitive population.
And against psilocybin, which is perhaps the most clinically advanced psychedelic.
Psilocybin's primary mechanism often produces profound alterations of consciousness, including ego dissolution. This can be disorienting or distressing for individuals with alexithymia and sensory processing differences. Data from Maastricht University shows that 2CB at matched doses produced significantly less dysphoria, less subjective impairment, and lower ego dissolution than psilocybin. Ketamine, on the other hand, works through different mechanisms and produces dissociative rather than psychedelic effects, so it doesn't address the serotonergic and social-emotional processing central to this hypothesis. The paper emphasizes these comparisons are a rationale for investigation, not definitive proof of superiority.
So 2CB offers a unique balance, emotional access without overwhelming sensory input or cognitive dissolution. What specific features make it a strong candidate?
There are several. First, its ability to maintain cognitive clarity with less subjective impairment than psilocybin. For autistic individuals who rely on cognitive control as a regulatory strategy, this is crucial. Second, reduced ego dissolution scores mean boundary softening without collapse, which is more tolerable for alexithymic individuals. Third, its mixed intactogenic psychedelic profile from dual 5-HT2A2C agonism plus SERT interaction means emotional warmth alongside perceptual shifts, directly targeting empathic and social difficulties. And finally, its shorter duration of 4 to 6 hours compared to other psychedelics offers reduced exposure for sensory sensitive populations. Anecdotally, it also shows a dose-dependent spectrum from entactogenic at lower doses to psychedelic at higher ones, which is key for the protocol.
This brings us to the core of the therapeutic approach proposed by Sam Karame, the Karame protocol. It's built on a four-domain framework: intellect, emotion, spirit, and body. How do these domains integrate into the therapy?
The Karame protocol assesses the whole person across these four domains. Intellect covers cognitive processing and metacognition. Emotion addresses affective regulation, empathy, and introspection. Spirit relates to meaning-making and existential coherence, but in a secular sense. And body focuses on somatic awareness and sensory processing. This framework draws from historical philosophy like Aristotle's De Anima, through to contemporary neuroscience and somatic psychology.
But the paper is clear this protocol isn't yet validated. What's the process for making it ready for clinical use?
That's a critical point. The Karame 4 Domain Assessment, or K4DA, is currently a conceptual framework. It needs extensive psychometric validation, including operationalized scoring, reliability testing, and normative data in both autistic and neurotypical adult populations. This validation is considered phase zero of the research agenda, a prerequisite before any clinical deployment.
Beyond the framework, the protocol includes a three-tier dosing architecture for 2CB. This seems to be a novel approach. Could you walk us through how this works?
It leverages 2CB's dose-dependent spectrum. Tier 1 is microdose maintenance, 1 to 3 milligrams, administered on a defined schedule between macrodose sessions. The idea is to sustain low-level serotoninergic modulation and maintain neurochemical flexibility for integration work without producing perceptible altered states. This tier is exploratory right now, as no controlled 2CB microdosing data exists.
So a continuous, subtle background effect. What about the actual therapeutic sessions?
Tier 2 is the N-tactogenic session using 10 to 15 milligrams. This is considered the primary therapeutic dose, designed to induce emotional warmth, maintain cognitive clarity, and soften boundaries without full dissolution. This is where the guided therapeutic work within the four domains would largely happen. Tier 3, the psychedelic session at 20 to 25 milligrams, is reserved for participants who've shown readiness after Tier 2 and whose process indicates a need for deeper processing. It's not mandatory or first line. Dose escalation is a collaborative clinical decision. This tiered approach respects sensory sensitivity and cognitive rigidity by not starting with full psychedelic intensity, offering a structured, individualized escalation path.
That's a very thoughtful design, prioritizing individual needs. But with such a unique population, particularly those with alexithymia, how does the protocol address practical concerns like informed consent and safety?
For informed consent, especially with alexithymic populations where identifying emotional states is difficult, adaptations are crucial. The paper proposes an extended multi-session consent timeline using visual or audio materials and an experiential familiarization session in the therapeutic setting without the compound. There would also be pre-established nonverbal withdrawal signals, and consent would be treated as continuous. For safety, there's strict oversight from an independent data safety monitoring board, rigorous exclusion criteria, including psychotic spectrum history, epilepsy, and current SSRI use, and cardiovascular monitoring during sessions. The protocol also makes sure that participants must have a documented trauma history, explicitly targeting trauma-driven distress rather than all autistic distress.
The paper lists several, which it states define the research program itself. First, there are N equals zero participants from the target neurodivergent population in 2CB studies. The pharmacological rationale is extrapolated from neurotypical data, and neurobiology differs in autistic individuals. Second, the Karame protocol itself is unvalidated and conceptual. Third, the hypothesis about interdomain permeability is speculative, linking philosophical ideas to neuroimaging without direct empirical support. There's also the fact that controlled 10-milligram data for 2CB isn't yet published, making its intactogenic dose range incompletely characterized. And finally, the founder has a personal conflict of interest due to experience with 2CB, though this is managed by independent oversight.
Acknowledging limitations so directly actually strengthens the proposal, highlighting its scientific integrity. So, to bring this all together, what are the main pillars of this research rationale, and what's the ultimate takeaway for listeners?
The case rests on three empirically testable pillars. First, that 2CB's pharmacological profile makes it a uniquely differentiated candidate for neurodivergent populations. Second, that the Karameo protocol provides a clinically useful framework for neurodivergent trauma therapy. And third, that the combination of 2CB and the protocol will outperform either component alone. Each of these requires validation through the phased research agenda. The historical hypothesis offers additional motivation, but the most crucial takeaway is the undeniable need.
autistic adults experience PTSD at dramatically higher rates and often struggle with alexithymia, leaving conventional treatments ineffective. The psychedelic therapy renaissance has largely ignored this significant portion of humanity. This paper doesn't claim to have all the answers, but it precisely names the questions and provides a structured path for investigation.
It's a call to action for the scientific community to address a long-standing oversight. If you found this discussion thought-provoking, please share this episode with someone who might also benefit from hearing it.